Sound of Hockey episode 279. We're calling this one the Tomáš Tatar episode. Why are we calling it that, John?
Tomáš Tatar has 279 career blocked shots.
Ooh.
He's the only one with 279 right this instant.
The only player in the NHL?
That's
like
right.
The active player?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, since probably 2000. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Well done. This is Sound of Hockey. I'm Darren Brown at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter, joined as always by John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL to Seattle on the X.
And also Curtis Izaki. Hello, Curtis.
Hello, everyone. Deep Sea Hockey on the X.
And we're also joined by a very special guest in studio, the radio play-by-play voice. He is waving to his many admirers here in Bardown Studios. Everett Fitzhugh is here. In the building, in Bardown Studios. Welcome, Everett. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, guys. How are we doing? Glad to be here.
Oh, and he's going NPR style.
Very happy to be here. It's been a fun time this season. We've done this before, Darren, more of the half episodes on the road, but
now we get to be here in
studio. This is a wonderful opportunity.
What do you think of
me.
The studio? Assess the studio.
This is a good spot. I like, you know, this is a hockey player's basement right here. This is a hockey dream. If I ever had a man cave, I would want it to be like this. You've got a bunch of sticks,
slash
you've got
jerseys, storage unit, yeah,
some storage unit. That's fine. You know, you've got your TV, you've got a treadmill that I'm sure gets plenty of use.
I use it.
Okay, that's fine. I also have a treadmill in my garage.
I used it today. For, let the record show, I used my treadmill today.
Yeah.
So no, he's protesting a lot now.
That was a COVID purchase. I need to move.
I ran out of space in my dryer before, and I've had to hang a few things. So yeah. I've used my treadmill.
Okay.
Oh, for sure. No, I'm right there with you.
No bad ideas.
Well, we're very excited to have you here, Everett. You are here with us for the entirety of the show, which only takes about 3 or 4 hours. So,
perfect.
Cool.
No, we're good. We're good.
It's a good show, too. We have a lot to get through here. A good show about a bad week for the Seattle Kraken.
Yeah, how are vibes? You were really happy last episode. How are you feeling right now?
Feeling less happy this week, I'll be totally honest
with
you.
No workouts this morning?
I did go for a run this afternoon.
Your tone seems kind of positive, actually.
Yeah, it does.
That's Everett.
I think it's Everett. Yeah.
He brings it out in us.
It's going to be a tone struggle today, because I think we're all excited because Everett's here.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's fair.
But we're bummed.
These guys sound like this team's going to go all the way here.
That's right.
Yeah.
We're gearing up for the playoffs, boys.
0.1% chance on Money Puck, but hey, we're going to do it, boys. We're going all the way.
You know, I was walking after the game, that incredible game against the Buffalo Sabres ended on, what night was that, Monday? What day is it today?
Yeah,
Tuesday?
Monday. It was Monday night.
Monday night. Yeah. I was walking down to head to the dressing room, and I always just catch like 10 seconds of you and Al on the radio as I'm walking like by the Zamboni area there. Cause you guys play down there for some reason. I don't know if you know that. And as I'm walking, the only thing I heard you say was one positive, the Kraken were plus 10 in shots in the third period. And I was like, oh.
Listen, we've talked how many times?
Any port in a storm.
Have we talked about shot generation and offensive chances? Hey, listen, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
True.
So
that's true.
You know, if you're putting pucks on net, chances are you're gonna get one or two of them to go in.
And Everett's just educating the people about score effects.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
right. Yeah. I mean, granted. The outcome was that the only team that scored that period was, in fact, the Buffalo Sabres, and it was Jeff Skinner completing his hat trick, which pushed the game to 6-2.
But it wasn't for lack of trying.
That's right.
Lack of trying.
That's right. We also have on this episode two pretty awesome interviews that we've already recorded with Shane Wright and Ryan Winterton. They'll be back-to-back a little bit later. Very, very fun conversations there. We wanted to start, though, with Everett, with some kind of non-Kraken... Well, there's some Kraken-related stuff in here, but just some Everett conversation topics that I think you might enjoy.
Love it.
So I wrote down a list here. Okay. First one... How are you doing with being a dad? Have you kind of gotten the hang of it at this point? You're what, 2 years in?
Yeah. He'll be two at the end of May. Mm-hmm. I think if anybody listening to this podcast has kids, I don't think they'll tell you, I don't think you ever fully get the hang of being a dad. It just kind of, it switches on you. It's constantly evolving, this role of parenthood. But I mean, this has been the greatest joy of my life is being a father. And I'm not even kidding. I remember when I was in college, people would ask me, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do? And I always would tell folks, I'm like, listen, I've got two goals in life. I want to get to the NHL and be a broadcaster, and I want to be a father. And thankfully, I was able to accomplish both of those in my early 30s. But no, he's awesome, man. He'll be two in May. And he is saying words every day, new words. He's adventurous. He's got personality for days. He is a big son of a gun. Like, I mean, I'm over the moon, right? Like, it, the worst part is when you're gone for so long, yeah, you know, road trips, and you know, you have to FaceTime them, and you're parenting over FaceTime. So my wife gets all the credit in the world because she's a rock star. But you know, being a dad is awesome. My worst day at home with him, like, he's running around the house, sick, doing whatever. My worst day at home is still better than my best day at the office. So,
speaking of getting sick, has he gotten you with like baby germs yet?
Oh no, he has not gotten me yet, but I actually have gotten the entire house with Kraken germs before. Oh yeah, when we had that little we had that bad little outbreak right after Christmas, right?
Before, yeah. You were part of that?
I wasn't. I had like a 24-hour thing.
Okay.
But then I go home. My son's in daycare. He brings daycare home. Mm-hmm. I bring Kraken home. Ooh. And then I'm gone for 12 days. And then I get home. The locks are changed. Divorce papers are on the front step. You know, house is cleaned out. Shelly's like, I can't do this anymore. No, she was great. She wasn't great. She was terrible. He was terrible. Everyone felt terrible, and I felt terrible because I brought it home with me. But luckily, he's not gotten me deathly ill yet. So knock on wood.
The word yet.
I do remember during that trip to New York, I went to the game at Madison Square Garden, and it was right in the thick of when they kept, you know, like, there was no secret that everybody was sick. And we went into that dressing room to ask questions, and I'm like, like, kind of like covering my face.
I'm not gonna throw this player under the bus because I don't know who it was. I have an idea of who it was. We were on the plane on that trip, and it was quiet. Guys were doing their own thing in the back, and then all of a sudden you just hear like the loudest, most fake, cartoony hack from the back of the plane. And everyone up front is like, what's going on? And it's just, I have an idea of who it was. I'm not going to spill. But yeah, that was intense. Those couple days on that road trip. And I think it was going from New York to Edmonton, like the last leg there. Oh, it was just,
yeah.
Whew, it was brutal.
He was the Rudy Gobert touching all the microphones, yeah, 100%. At the beginning of COVID, right?
You know, Rudy Gobert, I don't know if you know this, John Forslund stayed in his room. Like, so after that happened, right? It was in the same hotel.
Yeah.
So John was in, where was that? Is it Denver or somewhere? That was
Utah.
Was it Utah?
I thought so.
Was it Utah?
Yeah. I don't know.
There was a player who had COVID, and John Forslund actually, like, the team left, and then John came in, Carolina came in the next day, and John was that player's room.
Yeah.
So wherever it was. I thought it was Rudy. I thought he said it was Rudy, but it was
could have been pretty, Denver.
So, yeah. I don't know where it was, but yeah. So interesting story between him and him. So
wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
The more you know.
Our next conversation topic, I just wrote down the Detroit Lions.
Oh.
There
goes the good vibes.
Yeah, vibes are bad.
No. I mean, this had to be kind of a... Okay.
Yeah.
I get that last game was really rough.
Yes.
And you happened to be on the air broadcasting during that game, wearing your Detroit Lions silver jacket.
I was.
You are a lifelong Detroit Lions fan.
I am. For better or for worse, mostly for worse.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But it had to be kind of a fun ride to see them make it. And,
it was. No, yeah. it was a fun ride. And again, I grew up in Detroit as a Lions fan. I watched just about every single Lions game from, you know, from the time I was in first grade through I graduated high school, right? Like, every Sunday you're watching Lions football. That's what you do. So for me to see my team on the verge of an NFC championship, you know, that was pretty spectacular. And for all of the flack that I gave the decision making in that game, like, I think just from a pure fan perspective, it felt good. It felt good to see it. Now I'm hoping that the team can keep it up. I mean, I like what they've done in the offseason, but football is a weird sport. I feel like every other sport, hockey, baseball, basketball, you can set these foundations for years to come, right? There's always next year. Except in football. And I feel like you look at the you look at the last handful of teams that have gone to the Super Bowl, unless you're Philly or Kansas City, right? Look at Atlanta, right? 28-3, and they lost to New England, and everyone's like, all right, they're gonna be back. They've not been back. New England, they've not been back. They were in against the Saints a couple years ago, and everybody was like, oh, both the Vikings and the Saints, oh, they're gonna be back. They've not been back. And I feel like football's the one sport where there isn't always next year. The last time this happened, the Lions lost in the NFC Championship game. It was 91-92. They missed the playoffs the very next season. And then the 6 years after that, they lost each year on the road in the NFC wildcard game. And then they missed the playoffs 9 of the next 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost the other three. I remember the last time the Lions were in the playoffs before this year, I was sitting in a sports bar in Wheeling, West Virginia, watching the Lions
it's a lovely town.
Pumped by Seattle. Yeah. Great, great town. Yeah. My favorite part of Wheeling, West Virginia is St. Clairsville, Ohio, which is on the other side of the river.
That toddling, that's what Frank Sinatra is singing about, right? That wheeling, that toddling. No, that's Chicago.
Yeah.
Chicago.
So it was an equally tough outcome for another football team you were heavily invested in, the UW Huskies, until the very end there when you were rooting for another team, it seemed like.
Yeah. So so this year, it's been a weird football year for me because, again, being from Michigan, you know, I grew up a Wolverines fan. And since moving to Seattle, I've adopted the Huskies as my second Power Five teams, largely because other than until the whole, you know, realignment thing happened, the Huskies and the Wolverines are going to play each other this year in non-conference, and that was it, right? Like, we're never going to play each other. I've got a lot of really good friends here that I've met in Seattle that are Huskies. One of my really good friends is the former Harry Husky of when he was in UW.
I don't think you can reveal that.
Yeah.
I didn't tell you who it was.
Okay,
but I know a guy who was the former Harry Husky. So I wish there was some hatred. I really do. Like, I wish it was Michigan, Ohio State in the final, or Michigan, Alabama, or
Big
whatever.
Big Ten, though, now.
Big Ten now, yeah, exactly. So, but now, like, I still like the Huskies, but again, I grew up in Michigan. I actually went to high school in Ann Arbor across the street from the stadium. So, like,
It's a bit tougher now.
It's a bit tougher now. Yeah. It's a bit tougher now, but I think Michigan's going to be on the downswing for the next few years. I feel like the Huskies, they lost a lot. I think we both are going to be kind of dipping a little bit before we come back up. So, I mean, I can still continue rooting for the Huskies, but I think, you know, as is the case with a lot of rivalries, it's going to take one big game or one bad hit or one malfeasance when I'm going to be like,
a little bit of nasty.
Guys are making it hard here, you know, but for right now, I'm towing that fandom line. I am a Huskies fan. I am a Wolverines fan. Separately, my two worlds do not collide. And when they do collide, you know what? I'll flip a coin. But
and you're wearing your Cincinnati Cyclone shirt, which of course is referencing your previous employer in the ECHL. So my next conversation topic here, and our last conversation topic, what was the most, like, looking back on it?
Yeah.
Something that was just totally normal when you were in the ECHL.
Yeah.
But then you got to the NHL and you were like, oh, that was a thing we used to do in the ECHL. Is there anything like that?
Oh, my goodness. How much time you got? Jeez. you know what? I think for me, the craziest thing that I saw in the ECHL is that you only were allowed 10 forwards for a game. So you skated 10-6-2.
Right.
And which, I mean, that was tough, right? But then you added in 3-3s on 10-6-2. I remember we had
meaning three games in three days.
Yeah, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We've had a bunch of those. I'll never forget. We had a Friday night game in Indianapolis. Then we went to Fort Wayne on Saturday. One of our players got injured, was actually taken to the hospital. Luckily, he was fine. But we had to pick him up from the hospital.
In the bus,
on the way to Brampton, Ontario, which is
the Brampton Beast.
Yeah, which is a 7-hour bus ride, not including the border stop. So 7 hours overnight. We played at 8 o'clock on Saturday night, 2 o'clock game on Sunday afternoon, mind you. And then, so we pull into Brampton, 10:30, 11 o'clock. Get day rooms for an hour. I shower, I change, we go to the rink, we play, and then we bus back home, and it was lovely. Let's see, another weird thing that I remember is also we were in Brampton again. So we played Brampton on Friday, off day Saturday, played Brampton on Sunday. So we just stayed in Brampton all weekend and
just seeing the sights
of Brampton, Ontario, which is like, I mean, we're not making money in the ECHL. Per diem was like $42 a day. So it's like, I'm not even Uber to Toronto because you're 45 minutes outside of town. Like, that's going to be an arm and a leg. So we were Friday, Saturday, Brampton drove to Adirondack, Glens Falls, New York, about 6.5 hours away for a game on Saturday.
In between the two.
So we're just sitting there waiting for them. So they go home, Glens Falls home, and we ended up winning both those games as well. I would say the scheduling is really weird in the ECHL. You only play Friday, Saturdays, it's the occasional Wednesday because, you know, weekend dates, minor league hockey.
Bus to Idaho? Like, did you play Idaho?
We flew. So we that's the only time we would ever fly was my second year in Cincy. We did a 2-week trip to Idaho and Alaska. So we played
Utah too?
Utah wasn't on that one. So that's the only Utah and Newfoundland and Tulsa.
Newfoundland would be tough to
couldn't bust in that one.
Yeah.
You could, but you could.
Yeah.
The only three that I've not been to, but I had a lot of fun in the coast. I mean, the cities are great, people are great. It's full on minor league atmosphere, right? Like, it was a lot of fun. But I would say the scheduling was weird, and then the roster construction was very weird because you only get 10 forwards.
What I was blown away is if you look at kind of the rosters for the season or for a particular season, there's like 50 or 60 people there, right?
Oh, yeah.
And just a ton of them just played like 2 or 3 games, right? Because it's probably just filling in because you don't have the depth that you need.
You don't have the depth that you need. And also, too, guys get called up all the time. You know, there was one year, my first or second year in Cincinnati, we went through like 50 players, 45, 50 some odd players. And I remember we were driving to Indianapolis for a game, and one of our guys got called up. So we pulled over on like a gas station on the side of I-90 or I-70 and or 71. And he gets out.
Let's make sure we get the right I-71 here.
Okay. I-71. All right. It's I-71. And then we pull over, lets him out, get his hockey bag off the trailer, which is in the back of the trailer. So we had to unload everything on the trailer get his bag, called him an Uber, and he was gone to Rockford, somewhere else. Then the next year, I think that maybe it was that same year, we had a trip down to Florida to play the Everblades in Estero. And we got we broke down in some abandoned gas station in Bumble Scum, Georgia. Our trainer, she got the table out and was doing treatments right on the side of the road. And it was like early November, so it was still kind of swampy down there. And there were tons of bugs everywhere. So we were getting bit to hell all on the side of this rural interstate. There was a Piggly Wiggly maybe a mile away. Guys went and got a sandwich tray or something like that. Yeah, it was great.
There should be a podcast exclusively dedicated to ECHL stories.
Oh,
because
starting with the Kelly Stanley Cup saga from a couple years ago. And
which one? Right.
Well, the one where it like disappeared.
It broke? Colorado came to the AHL and didn't give it back. Yeah, that one.
Great. It was fantastic.
Man, there's just so many great stories. Because Andrew Allen shared a couple, I think, when he was on the
first time, he was on the Make and Whoopee.
Oh, yeah.
In the day. This is not an ECHL story, but my sister tells a story because she played college hockey and their bus broke down. Or it didn't break down. It got stuck in mud or something, or maybe snow. And they're like, oh, we got to put something under these back tires to help it. And they all put their college textbooks under the tires.
Okay.
And the bus driver hit the gas, and it was just ripping out, like,
for sure,
100 pages, you know, like all the pages one by one. And so these pages are just flying around, and they, you know, they needed to like yell at the bus driver, like, stop, you're ruining our textbooks. But nobody could because they were all just laughing too hard behind the bus.
When I was working in Youngstown in the USHL, we got stuck in the mud, snow somewhere, and the whole team had to get out and push the bus. So that I've been a part of that before.
Yeah.
So.
Coach probably planned that out though.
Oh, 100%.
Right, just to get some work in. All right. Well, now you're in the NHL and you are covering a team. Or I guess, do you say covering when you're the radio voice? Okay, you're
with the team.
Talking about a team that stinks right now. I know you can't say that. I can, because I don't work for the team.
They are not playing their best hockey currently.
Okay. Yes. Tomato.
Well, they are struggling at the moment. Having some down days.
Yeah, 0-4-1 on their 5-game homestand. And mind you, this is the homestand that they came into with, like, I think a lot of them probably thought, like, this is the moment. We got to win these, and then we'll get ourselves back into the playoff hunt. And they lost that game against Vegas, which we talked about last week, so we don't need to relive that one anymore, John, because I know that one really hurt you.
Yes.
But the three since then have hurt me, I have to say. They've looked bad. And I think back to the first year, and I wrote about this in Three Takeaways, because it's starting to feel first year-esque, like after the game in the dressing room, you know, some of the things that they're saying, the way they're acting, it's just like, they know they're beaten, they know they're defeated, and they're saying things like, we just gotta, you know, Jordan and I were like, we just gotta win, you know, we gotta have some pride, we gotta do this and that. And it's like, it feels like year one, but this team isn't the year one team anymore. And so it's really frustrating, because the year one team, they were not good enough, like plain and simple, they just weren't good enough, but they never didn't try hard all the way until the end of the game. And that's, I haven't seen that the last three games. You know, Hextall himself said the word frustration, which I think is a big word for him to say.
Yeah.
I don't think he thinks that's a big thing for him to like admit that publicly. Like, the guys looked frustrated tonight, you know?
And that's one thing about Dave. You know, he is, I think one of his biggest strengths is the fact that he is so even keeled.
Yeah.
He stays so calm and collected. We joke sometimes, you know, that the Kraken could win the Stanley Cup and, you know, be like, well, off season starts tomorrow. Got a hard day of practice ahead of us. You know, big game here tonight. We got the win, and we'll enjoy it today. But it begins tomorrow, and that's not a bad thing, because you know, you don't want to get too high, you don't want to get too low, because when you are, as we saw this season, going through an 0-6 or 0-6-2 stretch, you don't want to have that feeling of the sky is falling. You look to your coach, you look to your leaders, and say, hey, well, if he's not freaking out, then I shouldn't freak out. So I think that is something that Dave doesn't get a lot of credit for, is the fact that he is so even keel. But, you know, Jordan Eberle, you're right, he said it last year or last night. He said, this reminds me of something that I said 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And that there's a fine line between winning and losing, and we're just on the other side of that line. Dave said, you know, for the first time this season, I've seen the frustration from the last couple of games creep in. And, you know, I don't want to go back to the Vegas game, but when you look at what happened in that game, that was essentially your season, if I can say that, right? You win that game. It's a 4-point swing. You're going up against another a Nashville team the next day. That if you can beat them, then potentially, like, hey, we're doing something here. But then you see the lead slip away in the last 16 seconds of that game. You lose it in overtime, and I think you could just see the wind fully come out of the sails.
You can literally see it on their faces when they gave up that tying goal.
Yeah,
it was like, oh. And then they just haven't, like, their faces haven't returned to normal.
And it's frustrating, like Dave said, and you feel for these guys too, because you're right. This isn't year one's team, but you've got your McCanns and your Eberlys and your Larsons and your Grubauers and, you know, guys who have been here since year one, Yanni Gord, right? Guys who have been here since opening night, you know, against Vegas in 21, right? So it is frustrating. You do feel for these guys, but I think that that isn't an excuse to not play out the year. You know what I mean? I mean, you still have a lot to play for, whether it be personally, whether it be from a team perspective. So just because the playoffs, for all intents and purposes, are not in the picture any longer, I mean, you still do have something to play for the rest of the season.
It's funny, right? When last night when we were watching the uninspiring loss to Buffalo, I was thinking about the season
but they were plus 10 in the third period on shots, so don't forget about that.
I didn't catch that in the broadcast. But I remember, and you know, I read your article today, Darren, about, you know, they never quit in year one. And I remember that the tail end of the season, right? And they played relatively well for the talent that they had on the team, the inaugural season. And I was thinking, like, well, I'll bet a lot of those guys were playing for jobs, right? Or thinking about next year. And as I was watching that game, I was just kind of eyeing, like, who's playing for jobs and who's really kind of wants to set a good example. And yeah, I just didn't see it at all in that Buffalo game. There was a couple players that seemed to be playing hard, but, and I think everyone's kind of trying. They're not fully mailing it in, but I think it's emotionally, like, they're spent and they just can't, they can't get to the level they need to get mentally.
A thing that I think about is, like, maybe you're in like a workout class, right? You do like some workout classes every now and then, right?
Yes.
And you're like, I'm not really feeling it today. I'm going to do all the exercises so I don't stand out and like look stupid, you know?
But my weight's going to be a lot
lower. I'm going to use some lighter weight today. I'm maybe going to cut it a little short on the reps and things. Yeah. Like, that's how it feels. Like, they're going through the motions to make it look like they're doing what they're supposed to do. The other thing that I think about too, and Curtis, maybe you can weigh in on this, but you've been awfully quiet, actually. It's kind of making me nervous.
No, I want to hear what you have to
say. They're in a position where they have two guys injured. There's no extra, right? Theoretically, they could call guys up just to give them some playing time, you know, because I'm thinking about, like, all right, how do you effectively, because at this point, they're best off losing every game from here on out, right?
Theoretically, yes.
Well, maybe not. Let's
finish the point.
Topic for debate. Yeah. But, like, how do you even call, you know, traditionally it's like, all right, we're out of the playoffs. Let's call some guys up, give them some chance. How do you even do that right now? Right? Because, like, Coachella Valley's good. They're going for the playoffs. Why would you?
Yeah. Would you want to expose Shane Wright to this now?
No. And plus, Shane Wright is, you can't burn his ELC.
Well, fine. But, like, I wouldn't expose any of my prospects to this right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a little hard, like, to overstate how disappointing this homestand was, just, like, drawing back. I mean, they sat Alex Wennberg in anticipation of a potential trade for two games on the road against the Flames and the Jets. They won both of them, right? Then they come home, and things are, you know, things are looking, we can still win without Alex Wennberg, the team is probably thinking, you know? And then just really flat performance against the Jets. They do bounce back a little bit against Vegas and then let it slip away at the end. And I think we've really kind of, you know, identified it. I think that was the moment where they just kind of let the adversity get to them. Vince Dunn is out. Jaden Schwartz is out. They don't have Alex Wennberg anymore. They probably feel like they don't have the guns to compete anymore. And they look at this, they look at the odds, and it just, the compete hasn't been there. It's just, like, very disappointing. And it was kind of, you know, they were coming back home. Their first game was against the Jets, the team they had just beaten. It seemed like it was there for them if they wanted it. But to your question of bringing up players from Coachella Valley or how do you approach the season from here, I think it's a worthy topic of discussion. I don't want that notion of losses are better to creep into the locker room at all. That's the type of thing you don't really recover from as an organization. I think the key at this point needs to be, like, what are we going to be next year? Like, we got to build something. There's got to be some foundation here for going into next season.
Everett, give us a spin. We need positivity up in this.
No, I'm kind of on that train as well. And I understand, you know, John, your point of not wanting to expose your prospects to the losing. But at the end of the day, I mean, your dream is to play in the NHL.
Yeah,
you want to play in the NHL. And it's like, would you rather win a championship in the American League or would you rather play in San Jose in the National Hockey League? Yeah. Everybody will tell you, I'd rather go 0-82 in the NHL than go 72-0 in the AHL. Hmm. So I think that, you know, you're building for the future. You have a number of guys down there who have seen time here, whether it be Shane Wright, Ryan Winterton. You've got a couple of other guys down there who are projected to factor in big to this team down the road, whether that be next year, 2 or 3 years from now, whatever. So why not get these guys some NHL time now? You've got a pretty, at least for the next handful of games, you're going to Vegas, Arizona, then you come back for Anaheim, Montreal, someone else,
Dallas, I think, is in there.
Yeah, and then you've got kind of a mushy-ish schedule in there,
Anaheim twice, right?
And then you go on the road, Minnesota, St. Louis, they're not easy, Dallas, Winnipeg. I mean, that's a difficult trip to end the season. But if you're telling me that, hey, we're going to call up Wright, Winterton, we're going to call up Morrison, whoever else is down there, right? Or Robertson, right? Whoever else is down there, and give them a look, whether it be for two games or three games, I've got no problem with
it.
Same. Ultimately, I'm fine with that. But right now, it just seems like it's...
But there could also be like the opposite. Like a young kid that's excited to be here could come in and bring some positivity to the room.
And, you never know. And maybe the veterans are also want to bring some positivity.
And also too, I think we're all kind of thinking number 51, right? You know, and this could be an opportunity for him to say, hey guys, listen, I've been scoring down there. I had a great year. I had a great year last year in playoffs to end the regular season. Give me 5 games. Give me 10 games to show you what I've done, how I've grown and how I've developed and how I've matured over this last, you know, calendar year, season and a half,
with
if you will.
Finally with some stability.
Exactly.
In his,
yeah. So yeah. I got no problem with it. And I'm with you too. I mean, listen, you get some youth in here, you get a couple kids who are buzzing, flying around and, you know, yeah, they're 21, 2, whatever years old, but if all they've known this year was a culture of winning, it doesn't matter where you've won. The fact is that you've won, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe you can bring that to the locker room. So I'm not buying, I don't buy the, you know, exposing kids to losses, because at the end of the day, you're going to lose more, you know, when you get to this level, it's going to be tougher. It's going to be harder. And I'd rather you get a little taste of that now at the end of the regular season. We'll ship you back at the end of the year.
It's no pressure.
No pressure at all.
Yeah.
So now you get 5 games, you get 10 games, nice little sample size a la Matty Beniers. And now I know what I have to work on these next 6 months going into training camp in September.
Here we go. Four home games next week.
Okay.
Montreal to Anaheim and then Dallas.
Yeah.
That'd be a good spot for Wright, right? Gets Montreal.
Yeah.
And to Anaheim. Yeah. That's good.
I agree with this thought generally. I do think, just thought experiment wise, like if you'd brought up one of these young players, like before the Sabres game, for example, when everyone was clearly down and tight, and there is a time and a place to do it. I think there is runway the remainder of this year to reward guys for good seasons, because Logan Morrison has had a good season. Ryan Winterton has had a good season. Yeah. Shane Wright via Ottavainen. Like all of them. I think if the thought is to bring them up for a couple games to reward them for a good season and just to get a look at what it looks like in the NHL lineup, you never know. They could be contributors next year. I'm all for that.
And also, too, that could affect your plans in free agency, because like, let's say one of these guys comes up here and you're expecting them to compete for a spot, and they come up here, they look totally lost, and you're like, ooh, okay, maybe we should address this. Yeah. Or on the other side of that, hey, we just put this kid in against Dallas twice, LA, we put him in against Minnesota, whoever, and he messed around and got 10 points. All right, maybe we've got something here. So I think it can only help you.
Yeah.
If you're trying to develop, and if you are looking toward the future, getting a guy, two guys up here, I don't think is going to hurt you at all.
Yeah. And I do think it'll be relatively short term looks, though. This is just my guess, of course. But I mean, the Firebirds are like far and away first place in the Pacific. They're primed for a long playoff run. I mean, you don't want to do it. I mean, I think it's also good developmentally, you know, if Logan Morrison, Shane Wright, Ryan Winterton get another 20 games in the AHL this year in the playoffs, you know, that's good for them too.
They'll still go back though, right?
Yeah, I mean, they'll go back. Yeah, they'll still go back. But if three of them are up for a month or something like that. You could imagine, I don't know. It just seems to me like it might be a call up more akin to what we saw earlier in the season with Ryan Winterton and Shane Wright. It's like, come up for a few games, play a few games, show us what you got, kids, and then go dominate in the playoffs.
And I will say, this is what I love about our organization is that we actually care about the development of players, both on the ice as well as mentally, right? Like, you want these guys to be in a good place. There are a number of teams in the AHL or the NHL who I don't care how my AHL team is doing. I don't care if they ever win a game. I don't care if they ever win a championship. Your job is to develop prospects for me, and then when they're ready, I will get them. I do commend Ron and the rest of the staff for saying, like, no, there's a great culture down there. We want these kids to experience winning. We want these kids to know what it's like to win, because, you know, I just said that you'd rather play in the NHL, but winning is contagious. If you know how to win in college, in juniors, in the minors, you won a Bantam championship when you were 10. Like, winning is winning, right? You know what that feels like. So I do think that there is something to be said about not wanting to upset the apple cart culturally, which I give them a lot of credit for. But again, one or two or three games, you're not going to do a whole lot of damage down there. And then you see what you have from these guys moving forward the next 6-7 months.
I'm really glad that we've so organically talked about Shane Wright and Ryan Winterton so much in this episode.
I know. It's pretty great.
Because we're going to have interviews with them very shortly.
Yeah.
But speaking of building for the future, the city of Kirkland is considering, or they're considering, a proposal from the Kraken. Kate Shefty reported this today, that there is a potential two-sheet ice facility coming to Kirkland, owned and run by the Kraken. I'm looking at you, John, because I feel like you might know a little bit about this.
Yeah, I actually saw it on Facebook via a city council member from Kirkland sharing it. Mm-hmm. And the proposal is basically of a dormant park and ride along Kirkland corridor on I-90.
What does that mean, dormant? Is it like haunted? Or,
sorry, not 90, 405.
Again, with the interstate.
Well,
we got to get this right.
Well, the people need to know.
So I think probably
more important in this case, since it's like a local thing. Anyway,
so I think what happened, and somebody's going to correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, you know, when they redesign the 405 freeway, and then they have the park and ride in the center.
Right.
It made the kind of the ones off the freeway obsolete. So anyway, I think it's pretty early, so I don't think we should get super excited about it, because they have a short-term plans and then long-term plans, and I honestly don't know how this is figuring. But another two-sheet facility, which should bode well, because I know that Kraken Community Iceplex is pretty much at capacity already, 3 years in, and some of that is that playoff run last year. I think that really drove a lot of interest. And this is how you really scale, is to do kind of like, you know, public partnerships with municipalities, and Kirkland's a great spot for it. We know a lot of players live over there, but and we know there's a lot of hockey players over there because of the families in there. So I'm excited about it, but it's a long ways out. I think at least 2 or 3 years tops or minimum.
It's early, but it shows that the ownership group is still committed to this notion of expanding the game and like kind of developing the community.
Yeah, and two sheets at a time is really kind of key to how you kind of make the economics work. So
I just want to make sure they're not going to move the practice facility farther from my house, though, right?
I don't think. I think this is just, well, if you...
It's already pretty far, so...
If you know... I'll check with that.
But the Twitter intern lives up there, right?
No.
So it'd be more convenient for the intern.
No,
it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Okay. Never mind. That's
good. Yeah, I think the model is very similar to the Dallas Stars have a lot of different rinks and areas with multiple sheet facilities throughout Texas. So I don't know how much they're going to expand, but this is a great sign that hockey's growing here.
One quick WHL update. The Battle of the Sound between the Thunderbirds and the Winterhawks. I went to it. It was really... really fun game. I'm so glad that I went. I was like really on the fence about it. I was just like, I don't know if I need another hockey game tonight. And it was beautiful out that day. It was pretty good turnout. I had a nice crowd there. And the Thunderbirds were down. I mean, Thunderbirds are definitely overmatched by the Winterhawks this season. Like, Winterhawks are a Memorial Cup contender. Thunderbirds are officially now out of the playoffs. So they've had a tough, you know, rebuilding season. But they were down 4-2 in the third period and came back and tied it. And then Sawyer Mineo had the winning goal in overtime. And I think Scott Ratzlaff had like 54 saves or something like that. Or 50, maybe 52
saves. You like Mineo, don't you?
I do. He's a very good player. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think he's one of those guys that's kind of flying under the radar. He is a Vancouver Canucks draft pick, but man, he's a slick skater and a very strong defender. Jugnauth look. Very good. I like Jugnauth a lot, actually. He's I think he had 2 or 3 assists in the game, and he's like creative, and he's got that kind of burst that you want to see from a junior player. Like, he looks a step faster than not every player. Like, he doesn't stand out in that way, but he gets going and you're like, okay, he's a smooth skater and he's very shifty with the puck. So, he's a pretty skilled defenseman. He's fun to watch.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's get to our interviews. They'll be back to back. First, you'll hear Shane Wright and then you'll hear Ryan Winterton. Here they are. Shane Wright and Ryan Winterton. We now welcome on to Sound of Hockey a very special guest. He was the number 4 overall pick of the Seattle Kraken in the 2022 NHL draft. He's now played 11 games for Seattle so far. We think there's quite a few more coming in his future. But this season, he's mostly been ripping it up with the Coachella Valley Firebirds. Welcome to the show, Shane Wright, and thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate having you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
So let's start here. You've been spending most of the season in Coachella, obviously, and looking back at, you know, your development curve to this point, it's been an interesting ride. You had a really chaotic season last year when you went to all different levels of hockey, many different teams. I wonder if you can just kind of take our listeners through what all that was like from your perspective.
Yeah, last year was definitely a bit of a roller coaster for sure. Obviously, started the year in Seattle with the Kraken, played 7 games, and then had, you know, 2-week stint with Coachella in the AHL, and then played 1 more game with Seattle, and then went to World Juniors, played World Juniors for Canada, played the season in the OHL in Windsor, and then once the season was done there, then I came back to Coachella and played the rest of the playoffs here in Coachella. So definitely a bit of a whirlwind. A lot of different teams, a lot of different faces. So bit of a crazy year, but also really rewarding year as well.
Yeah. And what did you take away from each of those different stops? There had to be like different little learning experiences at each place. Are there some things that you remember from, you know, whether it's playing in the OHL or playing in juniors, like things that really helped you in your development, do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of things everywhere I went, tried to learn something, tried to take anything from, whatever situation I was in, tried to, have an open mind and, you know, ask questions and learn from everyone or from my teammates and coaches and all that. So, yeah, I mean, definitely learned a lot, definitely grew a lot as a person, as a player, matured as well, you know, in terms of having to be in all those different situations, all the different places, have to adjust and adapt to those situations. So definitely learned a lot, definitely grew a lot, and, had some pretty cool moments along the way as well.
And so as hectic as last season was, right, it's got to be a little bit refreshing to kind of go to the same arena every day. Like, is that make it a little like easier for you to focus on kind of what you need to work on and what you're kind of trying to accomplish? I mean, you seem to take every step in stride and kind of making the best of the situations, but there's got to be some niceness about the stability this year.
For sure. It's definitely nice to, be, like you said, have stability this year, be able to, rent my own house here, have my own car here as well, and be able to go to the same rink every day, be able to be at the same teammates, have the same guys around me every single day, and same systems and same same kind of things like that, same coaching staff and all that. So it's nice to have some stability this year for sure. It's nice to kind of be in one place for most of the year rather than kind of bouncing all over the place like it was last year.
And you did get to make your NHL debut last year in Anaheim. John and I were both in the building that night, and I actually remember walking right by you in the tunnel after the game, and you're giving a big warm embrace to your parents, and there are some tears being shed, and it just seemed like a really special moment. And I even remember I considered being like, oh man, this will make a great picture, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna just leave them alone to enjoy their private moment here. This is such a special thing. I'd love to hear from you, what that night was like for you. What do you remember from that experience?
I mean, it's a dream come true. It's what you dream about as a kid. It's what you look forward to ever since you start playing hockey, is your first NHL game. And same thing like any other guy, just a surreal experience, unbelievable experience to be able to accomplish that. And pretty special moment for me, and having my family there as well was extra special.
Was the no bucket warm up, was that just forced upon you?
Yeah, they stole my helmet before warm up, so I wasn't able to I didn't even have it in my locker before I went out for warm up. So yeah, I was stuck with no bucket for that warm up.
Yeah, I don't imagine that you're a guy that typically warms up without a helmet or has ever been able to do that before, right? So that probably was just added a little bit to the nerves that night.
Yeah, my first time ever. It was actually kind of scary. You know, you're shooting pucks and then you're kind of swinging, you know, low behind the net. You don't want to have one go off a crossbar post and hitting the heads. So it was a little scary being out there with no helmet on for sure. And obviously never really done anything like that before. So
yeah, imagine the players in the old times that used to play without helmets. And then so another big career highlight for you, scoring your first goal, and it comes against Montreal, and we don't need to go into the kind of fake drama that got created around the draft, but I imagine that had to be a little extra special for you to get your first goal against that team that did, I mean, they did pass you up, right? At the end of the day, that is what happened. Whether there was drama around it or not, I imagine that added a little bit of extra excitement to that moment. Am I right?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I think honestly I was just excited to play. You know, it was the first game back from being in Coachella, and you know, played five games there and really you know, happy with how I played and really gained a lot of confidence. So I was, you know, more so looking forward to that game to kind of build off those games I spent in the AHL and you know, try to showcase myself as much as I could in that game, and obviously be able to score the first goal, you know, no matter who it's against or what, how it goes in. Obviously, you know, just crazy experience. Obviously, such a, you know, such a cool feeling, and it was a fun game for sure. It was nice scoring a goal. Yeah.
And so, you know, what's your living situation right now? Like, do you have roommates? This has got to be a little different than what you had in the last year, and probably obviously through junior. But do you have your own place, or do you have roommates? How's that work down there?
Yeah, I have a roommate here with one of the guys, Jacob Melanson. Me and him, we're renting a house out here together. So yeah, nice having a roommate, cut some costs down a little bit. I mean, there's only like different out here. You know, there's not really like apartments out here. It's all kind of, you know, houses and communities and stuff like that. So yeah, we rented a 3, you know, bedroom apartment here, and it's been great. Loving it here.
What's the yard maintenance looking like, and who takes care of it?
Our landlord has people come in and take care of it. So we don't have to worry about that. Yeah.
All right. It's part of growing up. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are you doing away from the rink down there? Actually, we were curious about that. Are you hitting the golf links? I feel like I heard you're not a huge golfer at some point, but is that wrong?
No, I'm a pretty big golfer.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of golf here. There's 100 golf courses here. So, yeah, we definitely, you know, get out a lot as a team for sure.
And so who's ripping it up on the golf course this season? Anybody taking some big strides from last year?
I mean, my roomie, Jacob, he's probably the best on the team right now, I'd say. I'm like mid pack. I'm like around 80. So, not one of the worst, but not one of the best either, but, I'm getting better. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. And I'll be down there actually next week. I mean, is there any spots, any local spots that I need to make sure I hit that you've been enjoying so far in Coachella?
Not really. No. I mean, there's not a ton here. I mean, it's a smaller, I mean, the valley's big, but I feel like there's maybe less to do here than what I'm usually used to. But anywhere you go, it's always, you know, nice weather and stuff and warm and all that. So yeah, there's still lots to do. There's still lots of places to see.
I always wonder about, you know, players in your position, whether you're a prospect or you're with the NHL's AHL club. How much do you follow the Kraken down there? Like, do you watch all the games? Are you able to watch the games? Like, how do you follow the Kraken up here?
Yeah, no, I watch their games. Definitely follow them for sure. And yeah, I try to watch. I like watching hockey in general, so I like watching games at night. So whenever they're on, I usually, you know, put the Kraken game on and watch them. So yeah, definitely try to follow along a little bit and you know, see how they're doing.
And then you did get called up for 3 games in November. It was also at that game. It's Winterton's first game too. That must have been kind of fun. You've obviously played 7 or 8 games last season, but were there any additional takeaways from the three game stint you had with the club this year?
I think, you know, for me this year, those 3 games, I felt way more, you know, comfortable up there on the ice than I did last season, especially. I think just overall really, really felt like I belonged there, really felt like I could, you know, play there at that level, and really happy with development and how all that stuff kind of went and how I've grown and, you know, the confidence and stuff like that. So yeah, I definitely, you know, felt pretty comfortable out there. You know, felt confident, you know, being there, and, you know, just waiting for, you know, opportunity whenever it might come, trying to get back there.
We talked quite a bit there about kind of the crazy roller coaster that you had over the last couple of seasons. You've played in such a wide array of leagues at this point over the last 2 years. Like, how different is it to jump, say, from the OHL? I mean, I know you went OHL to NHL and then kind of back to AHL. Like, how big is the disparity between the different leagues from your side? Is there a huge jump from one to the next?
For sure. Yeah, I think there's definitely jumps. I mean, you're when you think about the NHL, you think about the best players in the world at any level, at any age group, at any, you know, level in their development. So, I mean, it's always going to be adjustment. You know, you're always going to have to you know, understand, you know, how to play and how to have success in the league. And you're going to have to understand, you know, what it takes to stick in the league and what it takes to, you know, be a good player in that league for a number of years. So yeah, there's always gaps. There's always, you know, disparities in the skill level. And I think a big thing is just trying to understand, you know, what you can do to stick in that league, what you can do to, you know, get to that level. And yeah, I mean, there's definitely some big jumps you have to make, but develop it and as good as I can right now to hopefully I can, you know, make that jump and feel comfortable in that situation.
And are there things, like specific things that you're working on to try to set you up to do that, to be that player that sticks around for a long time and is an impactful player in the NHL? Like, are there specific, you know, skills or just, I don't know, things in your game that you're trying to develop?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me right now, especially as a centerman, you know, I'll work on, you know, the 200 foot game, the defensive side, you know, taking faceoffs, stuff like that. Those the little small details that go a long way, and that can, you know, get you extra minutes. You know, for if or when, you know, I get a call up to NHL, I'm probably going to be playing, you know, a bottom six role to start. So being able to, you know, play solid defensively and be able to, you know, be a guy who can win some faceoffs as well, and you know, have the coach trust you to play well defensively at first, I think is a huge thing that can always get you, you know, more and more ice time. And obviously the offensive side, you know, will come eventually. Obviously I'm an offensive guy. I want to score and produce offensively, but what gets you, you know, more ice time, I feel like at the start of your career, especially, is being reliable defensively and making sure, you know, your coach can trust you in those situations.
Yeah. And so are you playing, like, even though you're playing top six type of a role in the AHL, are you trying to focus more on playing like that full two-way game so that when you get to the NHL, you don't have to change anything? You're already playing that way, right? Like, is that how you're trying to model your game right now, would you say?
A little bit, yeah. I think just overall, I think it's just a good skill to have. You know, if you're in any league, in any team, any situation, you're a guy who can, you know, be trusted defensively, but can also, you know, be a guy who can produce offensively. You know, you're going to be a valuable asset to the team, and that's kind of the guy that I want to be. That's a guy that I want to become. So it's always, you know, focus of mine to, you know, be solid defensively, be able to be trusted in a lot of different situations, and be able to be put in a lot of different spots on the ice.
And what is the biggest difference between the jump from OHL to AHL, right? Like, that you recognize that you're like, okay, whoa, I'm not in the OHL anymore. Is there something specific that pops out to you?
Yeah, I think obviously the guys are older, the guys are bigger, the guys are stronger, more physical for sure. You know, less time with the puck, you know, there's less time in space. You know, guys are closing in on you quicker when you have it. And I think systematically, you know, wise, guys are solid. You know, guys are, you know where to go in neutral zone and forechecking, and, you know, D zone, they know how to rotate in and out properly and play D zone. So learning how to, you know, understand those defenses and break them down and deal with, you know, getting pressured a little quicker is definitely a big adjustment for sure. And obviously, you know, the size and physicality factor is always there too.
Yeah, and the team is really humming right now. It seems like they're really hitting the stride the back half of the season. I think you've got 7 wins in the last 10 games. What's going on down there? What's clicking right now that is maybe kind of accelerating the team right now?
I mean, I think we're all just playing with one another. We're all, you know, playing within the system. And, you know, I think we have a really deep team right now. We have a really, you know, really deep group of forwards, a really deep group of defensemen, and, you know, 2 great goalies as well. And I think we can roll 4 lines and have all 4 lines contribute offensively, you know, each and every shift, each and every night. I think is a good recipe for success. And, you know, we're having fun as well. We get along really well as a group, really close, you know, tight-knit guys here. So I think that always, you know, goes a long way as well, having good team chemistry in that way, and just trying to play as best we can, trying to win as many games, and try not to, you know, get too far ahead of ourselves as well.
And it just seems like everybody can score on any given night, right? You might have a streak a couple games, and then the third or fourth line might be kind of starting to pitch in kind of more than just a goal here and there. It's significant. So it's really fascinating to see. Do you think that was like intentionally designed, or do you think that's a system design that kind of enables everybody to kind of contribute? Because it's very similar to the Kraken, right? When they're playing well, you know, literally all four lines, we always talk about, it's really probably more 3 second lines and a third line. But I'm wondering if it's kind of intentional down there as well.
I wouldn't say it's intentional. I think that's just a product of, you know, the players we have, and the type of team we have and the type of style we want to play. You know, we're not the type of team to play our top two lines, you know, 22, 23 minutes. You know, we're a team that's going to play all four lines. We're a team that's going to, you know, grind you down with all four lines, and all 60. So yeah, I think when, you know, we have a deep team like we have, I think, you're able to, you know, you're able to play like that. You're able to play, you know, all four lines a lot. You're able to, really roll one after the other. And, you know, when you get going, you can wear teams down. I think that's when, you know, we really have success, is when we're just kind of rolling each and every line. Every guy's playing fast and hard, and that's when we're really, you know, at our best.
You talked about the team having a lot of fun. Who's the biggest character on the group?
we got a couple of characters. Cole Lind, he's always he's a pretty fun guy around Potsy.
We interviewed Cole Lind last year, and he was on the golf course, and he'd be like, "Oh, hold on, guys, I got to go hit my shot." That's awesome.
Yeah, that's typical. Yeah, they're always fun. And Connor Carrick, he's hilarious. He's a really, really funny guy as well. Yeah, Potsy, Max, Lindy, they're all really funny guys. We, you know, McKinnon as well. Ian McKinnon, he's hilarious. So we got a fun group for sure. Yeah.
Love it. Where does Coach Dan stack up in terms of character? Like he seems like he's got a little bit of a goofball side to him as well.
Yeah, he's up there as well. Yeah, he's a fun guy. Yeah, he knows when to, you know, really be fun. He knows when to be serious, and you know, he's a great coach, and yeah, he's definitely a lot of fun as well. Yeah.
Last question for you, Shane. I think our listeners would love to know if you, just like for you personally, right? Like, what is your non-hockey passion? Like, what's the thing that you love away from the rink? We don't want to talk about hockey. Don't want to think about hockey. What's your thing?
Being here, it's definitely golf. Okay. For sure. Yeah. I mean, it's something I picked up a couple of years ago, but I think it's a good way to kind of get away from the rink, get away from the ice, and just kind of be on the course with your buddies and have a good time. You know, don't think or don't talk about hockey, just kind of get away from it. So it's probably a pretty typical answer, but I think it's, you know, a lot of guys can say the same thing for sure.
It's pretty amazing that you just said you picked it up a couple of years ago and you're shooting around 80. That's pretty incredible. I've been playing my whole life, and I'm not shooting 80. So
I don't have a lot of practice, that's for sure.
Yeah. And you probably have some good players to practice with too. So, all right. Well, Shane, thank you so much. We won't take up any more of your time, but we genuinely appreciate you popping on with us here. I'm excited to see you play in person again next week, and I'm sure you'll be back with the Kraken in no time. So best of luck to you. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Shane. That was awesome.
We now welcome on to Sound of Hockey a very special guest. He was a third-round pick of the Seattle Kraken in 2021, and that's looking like an absolute steal because he has 19 goals and 12 assists in 31 games as a rookie in the AHL. He also has already made his NHL debut earlier this season with the Kraken. Welcome to the show, Ryan Winterton, and thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for doing this, and thanks for having me.
Of course. We're excited to be chatting with you. It's been fun to watch your career progress in the way that it has here, especially with everything that you kind of went through over the last couple of years. And, you know, getting to watch, John and I were both in the building for your NHL debut in Colorado, and it seemed pretty special. I remember seeing your parents come down, and they were there in the building. What do you remember from that night? What do you think you're going to remember, you know, 5 or 10 years from now when you look back at it?
Yeah, it was, obviously, I know everyone says it, but it's a crazy kind of 24 hours after getting the call and everything. But it was going to the Ball Center, first game being in the Ball Center. It was awesome. And, you know, getting my family out there, getting them tickets. They were kind of scrambling on the flight there. My mom, she didn't have a seat on the flight. So they booked her a ticket. She didn't have a seat on the flight. Thankfully, they kind of made room for her as an kind of addition on the flight. And then they got to Colorado at probably 6:40. And the drive from the airport to the rink is about 20 minutes, and that's probably without traffic. So
yeah,
they weren't there till probably 10 minutes into the first. That's something that kind of really sticks with me, is that they were kind of scrambling to get there. They did a great job getting them there. I think it was, you know, a limo or something like that, dropped them off. And it was just really cool to experience that with them, have them there And then we went back to Seattle, and my girlfriend, my brother, and my uncle and them came out. So it was just a really special week, you know, living your dream. It's kind of, it's surreal at the time, and then kind of you move on like I am now, and it kind of really hits you how cool it was. So it was an awesome week.
Yeah.
It was a hell of a game for the Kraken as well, though, right?
It was.
Yeah. Yeah. They got, exciting. They got the win, so that was awesome, yeah.
So did you know, like, where your parents were supposed to be sitting, and were you kind of peeking up in the crowd to see if they had gotten there yet, or did you just not know where they were supposed to be?
No, I had no clue. Okay. I almost would have, yeah, I don't know. It probably would have distracted me a little bit, so probably a good thing they didn't. but, yeah.
Yeah. And so you ended up playing in, I think it was 3 games, right, with the Kraken before heading back to Coachella. What were some of the things that you took away from that experience? I'm sure you had to have learned a lot there in a short time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everyone was great. It's about how, you know, it's a battle, obviously. I know everyone says that, but every night is, you know, kind of not do or die, but in, you know, in the state that, you know, we're coming up from the AHL, you know, it's not, I don't want to say more, I don't want to get taken out of context, say way more serious, but obviously you feel the pressure a little bit more up there, and just kind of every day coming to the rink, being ready. It's obviously your full-time job. So you got to come and do the little things every day. Just seeing kind of everyone on the team, the older guys, dig in and kind of do that practices. It was, I don't want to say eye opening either, cause I've seen it before and obviously try to do my best to do that, but, it was awesome to see.
Yeah. And we kind of alluded to it, but your development path has been a little unique here. You had the COVID year where, you know, you didn't play at all. And then you end up getting drafted in the 3rd round, which I think at this point you've already proven that was totally wrong. But you know, and then you have the injuries and stuff. Like, can you kind of take us through these last few seasons for you and just kind of the roller coaster that I'm sure it's been?
Yeah, so it kind of started with COVID. That's when, you know, I before that, I don't know if, you know, I always thought I was going to get drafted, but it always seemed like such a far reach, you know, going to the NHL, getting drafted. But I would say, you know, after my first year, I kind of realized that, you know, if these guys are getting looked at, you know, other guys my age in the league and guys who I thought I was just as good as. So it kind of put that in perspective for me. And then obviously we had the COVID year, which sucked. But I was lucky enough to be picked for the U17 team for Hockey Canada. And we went out to Texas and we won the U18s, which was awesome. Great experience. And I think that kind of cemented, you know, maybe getting drafted. I didn't know where I was going to get drafted yet, but I think that kind of made me feel a bit better about how things would have went in the draft. And then obviously ended up getting picked 3rd round by Seattle, which was awesome. You know, I'd say it couldn't have been a better team to get picked by. First year expansion, it was great. And then, yeah, the shoulders, my shoulder, I dislocated it in training camp right before my first Seattle training camp. So I went out there, got it looked at, obviously. We decided to rehab the first time. So just rehabbed it for till Christmas for 5-6 months. Ended up coming back. Our team was in Hamilton. We had a really good team that year. We went to the finals. We actually won it. But in game 5, I scored and I was celebrating, kind of went to like hit on the glass, like kind of like throw your hands at the glass. And one of my buddies, McTavish, is kind of funny, look back, not his fault at all. I'm just, he kind of grabbed down as I was going up and I just felt it pop right out.
Oh my God. I never knew that's how it did,
yeah,
did it.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people do. And then, yeah, we did that. I missed game 6. It went to game 7. We ended up winning game 7 at home to win the UHL championship. And then we went to the Mem Cup. Everything looked good there. We didn't win it, unfortunately. We lost in the finals, but that happened. And then the following year, right, we went to development camp and, you know, had to get the surgery, obviously, because it came out the second time. And then from there, it was kind of an uphill battle again. I knew kind of what to do. I knew the things I had to do to kind of get back from it. I had done it previously in the rehab. So it's kind of just a lot of the same stuff. Got really old for sure, but no, it's stuff you need when you kind of grow in your career. The little piece like that, little adversities. But yeah, and then obviously the last year had a good year in London, got traded, and then this year has been going unbelievable. Up in Coachella, couldn't ask for a better spot either. And fortunately, got the call up, which was dream come true. And now we're just trying to roll deep in these playoffs.
And when you were, I hope I'm remembering this correctly, when you were on Hamilton, was that the team, I feel like you guys had some sort of victory celebration where you'd like hammer a nail down or something like that. Is that yeah. right?
Yeah. Yeah. We, every playoff game we won, we'd get a hammer and hammer it down. It's pretty cool that they did that. That was funny. I actually forgot about that.
I did too, until you were telling me about telling us about the run to the Memorial Cup. And I was like, oh, he was on that, because we were following it, right? Because we're like, oh, Ryan Winterton's in the Memorial Cup. Let's yeah. pay attention yeah. to it. And I just, for some reason, remember that. But so speaking of the OHL, I mean, how nice has this season been to just like have some normalcy, you know, like after yeah. all those things, you've kind of had some normalcy this season, even though you're in a different league, right?
Yeah, it's it feels good. Just kind of trying to stay as healthy as I can. Obviously, still a little bit of time left. Just trying to finish out as strong as I can, as healthy as I can, and win a championship here. But it does feel nice after the COVID. Getting hurt for a couple of years, it is nice to kind of at least be able to be in every night if you're maybe you get scratched, but having the opportunity to be in every night's it's been awesome.
What's crazy is about you coming back from those injuries, it never really seemed to impact you coming back. Like you would start the season on fire when you finally got into games, and that's what's so incredible, I think, about your journey. It's like instantly you draw into the season in December and it was crazy. Am I remembering that correctly, or did you seem to kind of like hit your stride right away?
Yeah, the first year in Hamilton, it was kind of, I remember I got, I think, 6 points the first game I came back, which was awesome, and it was kind of growing from there. But the second year, it was kind of quite the opposite, actually. I remember the puck just, wouldn't go in for me. Open nets on open nets. I just couldn't get anything rolling, but it's... yeah, I mean, it comes back pretty quick after you've been playing. So it was tough the second year. I mean, great the first year, but...
And so we've heard from a lot of folks around the Kraken org that you're really good in the corners and on the wall. Like, tell me what that means to you. And like, is it something you've kind of took pride in, or is that something you ever focused on, or just something that comes natural to you?
It's obviously something you got to work on. I don't think I'm that good. There's obviously room to improve at it. But, talking to a lot of the management side of it, that's, mainly what they look for. So, kind of digging into that every summer and even during the year. It's a work in progress. Obviously, everything kind of needs to get better as you move on. But I would say I'm doing all right at it now. But just like I said, you need to get better at it every day.
And you're having a really good rookie year, like you've mentioned before. But as of late, you seem to hit in your best stretch of games. So, what's clicking right now, and how's your season developed?
Start of the year, I started off pretty good too, and then I think it was right after I got the call up. I don't know what would have happened, but I kind of hit a little bit of a slump. Now we're, like you said, kind of back rolling a little bit. I don't know. It's just a lot of the development here. The coaches have been great. Jess Campbell, skating coach, skills coach, and Seattle has done an awesome job of just kind of developing us young guys in the gym, off the ice, and even on the ice. So I'd say a lot of it's because of the development plan they have for us. It's kind of next level, and I'm really fortunate for it.
Coming into development camp or at development camp, a lot was made of your fitness level. You won a fitness competition or whatever up here. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's really helped you with the adjustment to the AHL?
Yeah. I did well at development camp. There's always room to improve, obviously. I still need to, I'm still a bit of a skinny kid. Got to put on some weight. But fitness-wise, conditioning-wise, I think I've always been felt good. But yeah, like I said, just kind of need to continue getting my strength up and putting on some weight, but that'll always come.
See, it's never been hard for me to put on weight.
that's what everyone says. Yeah. My parents say you could take some of mine, but I wish it was that easy for me.
Yeah.
No, I do know, like, you train so hard, right? And you spend the whole summer trying to get stronger and bigger, and you add a few pounds of muscle or whatever, and then you get into the season and it's just like it's a different animal, and you lose all that weight that you've put on, right? Is that something you've experienced over your
because you're not training as much, obviously, so you're not as strong as you were in the off season, and then kind of sweating out 4 pounds every day you're kind of on the ice. It's hard to keep the hydration up and the food up, but it's obviously part of my job, so it's not that hard to eat as much as you can. I mean, it's got to be healthy for the most part, but it's not a terrible job trying to eat as much as I can.
I'll take it. So, going from the OHL to the AHL, what What is like the biggest difference between the two leagues playing and when something maybe you notice that right away you're like, okay, this is not the OHL anymore?
Yeah, I mean, for one, you're playing against men. So, I mean, like, you go from the OHL, you think a guy's big, he's got a beard, whatever, but now you got now you got 20 of them on the other side. So,
20
that
beards,
obviously a bit different.
20 beards looking back at you.
Yeah, exactly. That part's different, obviously, and just how tight it is in the AHL. I mean, OHL, it's kind of you have the puck for a while, you can kind of make more plays, have more time with the puck. But you know, when you kind of get up here, it's everyone's a lot tighter. Everyone's finishing their checks. You got to keep your head up at all times. You don't have as much time with the puck, and it's everyone's job. So at this point, so you gotta have the same mindset, and obviously, you know, it gets tough when everyone's, you know, trying that much harder because they're trying to make an income for themselves.
And there are a lot of like former OHL guys down there, right? Has that kind of helped ease the transition a bit in Coachella?
Yeah, there's a lot of OHL guys here, which has been awesome. But you know, I know a lot of guys like Morrison. I play with them in Hamilton. Robertson, I've known for a bit. Shane Wright, I've played with. So it does make it easier coming here and kind of knowing a couple guys.
Yeah. And what are you doing away from the rink? This is our last question, just getting to know Ryan Winterton on a personal basis. What are you doing away from the rink? Are you golfing a lot these days? I know that's kind of the standard for the Firebirds players.
Yeah. We tend to golf quite a bit, actually.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, on an off day or whatnot. Yeah, I mean, you're in Palm Springs, it's hard not to. So it's a great spot to play, obviously, and we're very fortunate.
Yeah. How's the swing?
It's good. It's coming along for sure. Starting to find it a bit more, playing better. So things are good.
Yeah. So what's your, like for me, I'm able to put like one part of my game will work every time I go out. But then like I can hit driver one day. Right. And then irons suck and putting sucks. Yeah. And then the next day I'll go out, my irons are great. The other two, right? Like, do you have a piece that you're like, all right, I wish this one part of my game would get a little bit better and it would change my golf game.
Yeah, my putting.
Your putting, yeah.
My putting for sure. It's always been kind of my weakness.
Yeah.
My short game has definitely got to get a little better.
And then do you find yourself trying all these different things to like, oh, what if I switch my grip and do this thing and it just, none of it works, right?
Nothing works, yeah. You just got to get better at putting.
That's it. You just got to be better at it, right? All right, exactly. Ryan, thank you so much for your time here.
Thank you guys.
Really enjoyed this. It's been fun to watch your career so far, and we're excited to see where you go with it. So best of luck. I'll be down there next week, so I'll be in the stands as a fan, so I'll be cheering you on.
Perfect.
All right.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for your time, Ryan. Cheers.
Take care, guys.
All right. Thank you again to Evan Pivnik for helping us set those interviews up. Those were really fun conversations. And Winterton, he's a cool kid.
I'm
a big fan.
He's fun.
Man, every time I've talked to him, I've been like, you seem so much older than you are. You're just like, you're like a well-spoken veteran hockey player, and you are incredibly young, and I forget that when I talk to you. So, really, really great interviews there. Thank you to Evan. Thank you to the Firebirds for letting us talk to them. And by the way, we're going to be getting our first live Firebird game action in Coachella.
That's right. We'll have some eyeballs on the players, some live scouting reports.
We'll be looking at it through beer goggles, but
love it.
Perhaps. Best way to do it.
Evan Pivnik, also a Bowling Green State University Falcon.
Oh, really?
Former voice of Falcon hockey, like myself. So just want to
throw
that out there. Oh, yeah.
Huh.
He's after me, though. He graduated in 17.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Wow. So, like, are the Kraken specifically hiring people that went to Bowling Green for some reason?
Let's see, myself, Disco Dan Bylsma, Evan Pivnik.
This is remarkable. You get Piper Shaw on here. It sounds like everyone went to St. Cloud, and now everyone went to Bowling Green.
Those Minnesotans. between Piper, Shaber, JT Brown, a lot of Minnesota love on those plane rides.
we now move on to our weekly one-timers. I don't know if you knew
that
we
know do that. That.
Sound effect that way. Our first weekly one-timer. TJ Oshie has hit his 1,000th game. He played number 999 against the Seattle Kraken, and then the game after that was game number 1,000. I saw that he actually got hurt in the morning skate the day before, so there was like question if he was going to play in game 1000. So
he's played since too,
right?
So he is number one Washington born games played.
Mm-hmm.
Who's number two?
He
has 724 games played.
Tyler Johnson.
Bingo.
Oh!
Who's number three? Who's number three?
How many games?
Blake Coleman.
561. Nope.
Who's the other guy from Spokane? Oh, Derek Ryan.
That's
Derek
right. Ryan. Yeah. Ryan. Number four.
Kyler Yamamoto.
No, Patrick Dwyer. Oh. Yamamoto's number five, and then Gambrell. Oh,
I was gonna say, where's Gambrell? Gambrell's
six. Yeah. So.
Hmm. Bonnie anyway, Lake. He's from Bonnie Lake.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah.
I did like in TJ Oshie's 1,000th game, he does that really strange like warm-up routine with Tom Wilson where Tom Wilson winds up and whacks him on the butt with a stick.
Yeah.
Did you see that? Every player went through and did that?
No.
Like I did see that.
Like a spanking machine almost.
Oh, my gosh.
Pretty funny.
Oh, that's good.
Our next weekly one-timer, Wayne Simmons has retired. John, you've always been a big Wayne Simmons guy.
I almost named this episode after Wayne Simmons, but man, what a warrior. Loved him in the playoffs. He is what I love about the playoffs. It's too bad we didn't get to see him lately. But yeah, so he's retiring a Flyer, but he played for five or six different teams, I think. So love the Wayne train.
Our next weekly one-timer. The NHL GM meetings have happened. There's been some proposed changes to rules. John, will you take us through those rule changes? And then I'd love for all four of us, I should say, to chime in with our opinions on these rules.
Yeah, there's a few. They're pretty minor. This one is interesting. The coach's challenge can be, you can implement a coach's challenge for a two-minute high-sticking penalty if they think it's friendly fire. What's tricky there is it would become a 5-on-3 if it's wrong.
Mm.
So you can imagine, because they got the initial high stick, and then if you get it reviewed and then they fail the review, then it's a 5-on-3.
So do you think that it seems like that challenge is only for friendly fire type of, if the replay shows it's one of your teammates hit you
right,
in the face.
Right.
But what if there was no high stick at all and you challenged, and it's like, oh, the guy just faked it. Do you still go down 5-on-3 in that scenario?
No, I think that would be...
Oh, it's just a challenge.
Yeah, it wasn't specific to friendly fire, but that was the...
Yeah,
that
well, was I saw it reported as kind of like you can challenge.
See,
if it's
I still
a
think, and I saw
situation.
It a couple times this year, and I think players are doing it intentionally where they're kind of protecting the stick from getting in on them, but they're subtly grabbing the opponent's stick and popping it in their shield. And then all of a sudden getting
Everett called. Doesn't buy it. Mm. Everett doesn't buy players hitting themselves in the face with the opponent's stick.
If you have a shield, it's not I don't know. I could swear that there's a couple times they did that. So
what is the thing about puck over the glass?
Also reviewable.
And this is basically just to like review if it got directly went over.
It was
right?
not reviewable before.
Okay. But there's still no subjectivity to this rule, right? Like it's still if you put the puck over the glass directly.
Yeah, right. I think I did see some talk about that, but I don't think that ended up getting supported.
Yeah, I still don't love the rule. We talked about it.
I think
recently,
we talked about it last week. Yeah.
Like, I don't know, a guy hits it out of the air with his stick, like batting the puck. I don't think he's trying to shoot it over the glass.
Yeah, and I always wonder when does a deflection become a shooting it out, right? So anyway.
Got to be a distinct swinging motion.
Yeah, so not a lot of changes.
do you think if you clear the puck up the boards and like a defensive player's stick gets in the way and it goes up on a play, like, I mean, or if he shoots it and goes off of, I don't know, like where does it end?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What I hate about all this is it expands the...
More replay.
Yeah.
I agree.
So,
So there's, we got to ask you, Everett, about if you have a rule change that you'd like to see. Think about that.
Okay.
I think there's one other proposed rule change that I saw. I think the new Matt Murray rule. Did you see that?
Oh, if your mask comes off?
Well, yeah. So if the mask comes off, but Matt Murray was known for, dislodging his own net a lot. And I guess the way the rule was written before, a goalie couldn't be called for a penalty for doing that. But now a goalie can. Be assessed a penalty if it's determined that they intentionally knocked their own net off. But
seems like a missing rule for a while, if that's the case.
You can't immediately you can't sit on the boards anymore, like when you're waiting for a line change.
Yeah,
the
linesman got cut last week. Yeah. Too,
really?
Right?
Yeah.
And the Winnipeg game, a linesman got cut, skate cut. He's fine.
Yeah, but you get a warning, but they can call a penalty if you do it too many times. But
see, it's kind of in line with my don't open the doors during play.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, they did look at 3-on-3 a little bit, but I guess nothing came of it.
So. All right, so Everett, do you have a rule change for us?
That's my rule: 7-minute 3-on-3 overtime.
I can get behind that.
5 minutes. It was great. It was so much fun when it first. Was initiated, but now so many teams, like, they only need the point, right? Like, and then you go to a shootout. I'm not a big shootout guy. Again, I think the novelty's worn off a little bit.
Yeah.
I would go 7-minute 3-on-3, and then that would be the rule that I would change. And they did it in the ECHL, which, you know, I was fine with. And then actually there was the CCHA, if I remember correctly, they experimented with a rule of, oh lordy, 5-minute 4-on-4, and if it was still tied, 7-minute 3-on-3.
That's right.
Yeah. Or maybe it was 7-minute 4-on-4, and then 5-minute 3-on-3. And then if it was still tied, then you go to a shootout. So extra 10 minutes of game, if you want to add. College is a bit different because you only play 45 some odd games and not 82, but still.
Yeah, I actually, like, I feel like that's probably too much.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You know what I mean? Like
at this level, yeah.
The league is more clockwork, I think, than people realize. You know, like, the buildings have, you know, as soon as they're done, they start ripping stuff down to, it's just, I feel like if you're adding that much, it's getting to be too long of a night sometimes. But the 2 extra minutes, I think, is nothing. Like,
what about 2 extra minutes, the 7 minutes?
And then they add their mascots to the ice.
Love it. Then it's 4-on-4 with the mascots.
The mascots. And then eliminate the shootout. Eliminate the shootout. That's what I'd say. Eliminate the shootout.
So end in a tie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bring it back. Bring the ties back.
Yeah.
Again, and listen, I say this because the Kraken, you know, historically haven't had the best luck in shootouts. But just even as a hockey fan, I remember growing up watching the game. The penalty shot was so exciting, right?
Like, yeah.
Now, I mean, that was kind of an in-game opportunity to see your best moves. But now, I don't know. I think it's just the shootout doesn't do it for me. I'm fine with the tie. You know, you do – maybe you switch the point system. So maybe you do two for a win. You do – or you get nothing. So you don't get the loser point. So maybe you just do 2 points regardless, and then you don't get the one if you take away the shootout. So that'll force teams to, you know –
Commit.
Yeah. Right.
Love it.
Yeah. Maybe. Let's, I don't know. I'm thinking about that. You know, the one thing that comes to my mind is, like, after a shootout, I've realized that, like, sometimes you think, oh, well, we lost in a shootout. It's, you know, it's no big deal. But, like, if you go into the rooms after the game, the mood is just as low if you lose in a shootout as it is if you lose in regulation. Like, and vice versa. The team that wins is pumped that they won in the shootout.
Because every team will tell you, oh, we should never have been in the situation to begin with, right? Yeah. Like, we either had the lead or we didn't play well enough. Like, we'll take the point, but we're not happy with it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So
I don't know. Maybe other people in this room may not like the shootout, but maybe people do. There are people out there that do like the drama too. But I feel like you see more people being like, man, I hate the shootout, like, more often than not.
You know,
there's for me, there's more drama in a 3-on-3, end to end, back and forth.
So
to me, the shootout is the letdown. Mm-hmm. Like, I just had 5 minutes, maybe one whistle, end to end, couple saves, here's a breakaway, yada yada yada, and then after all of that, it's like, all right, okay, shootout. Like, and then
I will say, it might be different from where you guys sit, but when I leave after a shootout, fans are, like, kind of still, like, excited about it. They're like, oh my God, that was, because we had one that went like 6 rounds or something, and people were just like, and I'm like, ah, oh, that's boring. Like, but everyone else is excited. I'm like,
well,
there's
certainly,
maybe,
like,
there's a big chunk of the fan base.
I remember year
like
one,
yeah,
we were in Montreal, and that was a great game for a variety of reasons. It was Saturday night in Montreal. It was their first full capacity crowd since COVID, and then that was that, like, 10-round shootout.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And I believe
Marcus Johansson won it.
Yeah.
Why do I remember that?
Yeah.
That was, like, their first shootout win all season. They had a bunch of shootouts they couldn't win,
and that it wasn't necessarily. an exciting game. Like, both teams were where they were in the standings, you know, it didn't really mean much, but for Seattle, like, it was their first trip to Montreal. And I just remember, like, that was exciting. Now that one was fun. But the other ones,
Our final weekly one timer. Our final weekly one timer. Chris, John missed his cue somehow. Got too much laughter as we're about to do an in memoriam moment here. Chris Simon passed away, former tough guy in the NHL. He not very old. He was early 50s, I think. Yeah. So sad there. He was definitely one of those feared tough guy players. He also had some problematic moments in his career that I remember. So not, you know, not the squeakiest.
Two 25 game suspensions, actually. So he's a bad boy at times.
Yeah. But
I remember seeing him on the Avalanche, man. Scared me because when he played the Sharks, like, he was so good.
Or,
he just was like, he was so scary enforcer style. Yeah.
He did stomp on Jarkko Ruutu.
Yeah. That was part of, that was one of the 25 game suspensions.
Yeah, that wasn't good. Yeah. Did some other bad things too.
Well, speaking of which, we did miss a bad boy this week.
Oh, did we?
Yeah. Dmitry Kulikov got a 2-game suspension for Connor Sherry in the head.
All right.
So we got it.
I wasn't sure.
That was close, man.
I wasn't sure if we do all bad boys. So we have a segment, bad boys. Yeah. So, if you get suspended, you could be on bad boys as well.
Oof, well, I get suspended for
I'm sure you could.
I could say something. I could probably find something. So. Not that I will, if you're listening.
Yeah.
Todd, Victor. I'm not.
Yeah. No, I think you've done very well.
No, they don't those guys don't listen. Don't worry about it.
Player, least favorite former player, any of those things. Oh. Just no one's listening. Just blur it out.
I love every player that's ever played equally.
Yeah. Fair response. Okay, those are our tweets, or excuse me, those are our weekly one-timers. And now we close the show with our tweets of the week. And by the way, I'm going to go ahead and warn you. I sing our outros.
Okay.
And I try to relate it to something on the show. Okay. So I'm just going to give you a heads up for when that starts in a couple minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't be alarmed.
Right. Tweets of the week. John, do you have a tweet of the week?
I do.
Okay. Go ahead.
I don't know how to say this guy's name, but I believe it's Neil Dalal.
Okay.
He covers basketball, but he said, I thought this was kind of funny. Obviously, March Madness is going on. NC State has more wins at Capital One Arena this week, 5-0, than the Wizards have this season, 4-26.
Oh my gosh. Ooh. That's Detroit Pistons level right there.
Easy. Hey. We're having a good time, just hanging out.
I remember, speaking of tweets, this one didn't come this week, but I remember weren't they like a game away from the all-time record for losing streak?
And they lost to Toronto.
Yeah.
Or they beat Toronto.
And it was like a guy who goes into a coma right after they had won the first two or three games of the season. Yeah. And then he wakes up as they're going for their 27th consecutive loss or something like that after that.
He's like, well, what did I miss? Yeah. It's like, wow.
What did I miss since those three opening wins from the Detroit Pistons? Anyway. Everett, do you have a tweet of the week?
I actually do have a tweet of the week.
Okay.
This is a shout out to my Bowling Green State University Falcon baseball team. They are now 7-0 in the MAC for the first time in a long time. Back on, this would have been Saturday, program record for most runs in a MAC game, second most runs in program history, a 34-8 win over Ball State.
Oh my gosh.
34-8 program record, 33 RBIs.
Man, they need a mercy rule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that weekend against Ball State, BG hung 34, 15, and 12, maybe that weekend. Like,
wow.
MAC baseball. Let me tell you about Midwestern college baseball. I know out here,
I'm sure there's a lot of people that want to hear about this. So yeah.
Yeah. Early season, bad weather, a lot of cold, windy, rainy games, and 34 runs happened.
Hey, man, I like MAC football early season.
Action?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Always good for an upset here and there.
Oh, I love the action.
Yeah.
Midweek action.
Curtis, your tweet of the week.
Well, that actually dovetails with mine. I mean, it doesn't have anything
to do
with
Bowling Green baseball.
No.
Yeah, more MAC content. That's what we need.
Mine is, it's a quote tweet. The original one was by the Kelowna Rockets. They had just lost to the aforementioned Memorial Cup contending Portland Winterhawks 11-1. They used the Spider-Man meme because the Tri-City Americans had also lost to the Portland Winterhawks 11-1. So it's a little Kelowna Rockets, Tri-City Americans, handshaking emoji being victimized by the Portland Winterhawks. The Portland Winterhawks, I don't know why, like what would compel like some like their social media person to actually tweet that. But anyway, maybe they just like the Spider-Man meme. The Portland Winterhawks retweet it and say, oh good, there's a support group.
helping everybody through it. Yeah. Mine is from at Grateful Keg. It's a picture of, oh, what is this guy's name? Who was the young guy on The Sopranos?
Michael.
That sounds right.
I've actually never seen
this picture of Michael.
What?
And he's behind, like, the, you know, they'd always like rob stuff off the truck or whatever, right? So he's behind a truck. It says, he's on the phone. He says, it was supposed to be a truckload of Armani suits tea. It's effing bobbleheads tea. I don't know what happened. So this is in reference to Jaromir Jagr's bobblehead shipment being stolen, which we didn't actually talk about. But I actually think that was a inside PR
job.
Stunt.
Yeah, it's an inside job, I think.
I think it was too. I have a conspiracy theory on that. Did that
themselves. I think it's confirmed not because the feds are involved. Because the crate was taken at a port. So it was a port security issue.
It might have been.
But then the Jagr video, though. The Jagr video, that was,
I think that was them leaning into
well
it.
Well produced and on too short a notice.
That's
they,
what I thought.
They
too,
came out with that the next day, didn't they?
It was the same day, but it was also like a two second video. And Jagr was there. Mm-hmm. Right. So like if they got stolen the day before, tweeted that out in the morning and everyone lost their minds about
it. And they might have known it was missing for a while. So they might have.
I agree, though. I was confused because I thought, oh, we've all been had, right? This is just a marketing thing.
But then every team starts tweeting about it. Like the other, because Jagr had a bobblehead with Florida, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't know what that one looked like. And a lot of teams were using their mascots to cover up, like, I've got your mascot here if you know. And I'm like,
gritty,
wait a minute.
Yeah, gritty had it.
This is something going on here. But
All right. We'll see how that all plays out.
Now the feds are involved. Okay.
Those are our tweets of the week.
And that wraps up 279 of the Sound of Hockey podcast. No reviews this week.
Oh.
What's up with that?
Jeez.
Anyway.
Kind of wrote at this point. You don't actually seem upset.
I'm not.
We need a 5-star review, people.
Yeah, we do need it. Bring the vibes up. Because they're pretty low right now. But indeed. Everett.
Hey, speak for yourself.
Thanks to
maybe
our guests. Yeah. Everett Fitzhugh. Nice. Amazing. Guys. Everett Fitzhugh. And anyway, anything else we need to say? Stick tabs? I need to write this down.
You really do. I did it for you once, but
then you erased it.
We do new show notes every week.
Subscribe on Spotify. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Not Stitcher anymore. That doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Google Podcasts?
I don't know. Maybe.
We're not on YouTube.
His palms are sweaty, knees weak, arms are heavy. There's vomit on his sweater already. Mom's spaghetti, he's nervous, but on the surface, he looks calm and ready to drop bombs. But he keeps on forgetting what he wrote down. The whole crowd goes so loud, he opens his mouth, but the words won't come out. He's choking how? Everybody's joking now. The clocks run out. Tom's rap over, blow. Snap back to reality. Oh, there goes gravity. Oh, there goes rabbit. He choked, he's so mad, but he won't give up that easy. No, he won't have it. He knows his whole back's to these ropes. It don't matter. He's dope. He knows that, but he's broke. He's so stagnant. He knows it, but he goes back to this mobile home. That's when it's back to the lab again. Yup, there goes Rhapsody. Spaghetti, spaghetti, spaghetti.